We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back to another episode of New Orleans Football. Clint Kubiak is officially the offensive coordinator of the New Orleans Saints. We're going to continue to talk about that. Who benefits the most from that hire? My guy Mike Triplett is going to join me to break all that down and a whole lot more on today's episode presented by PJ's Coffee. And we are coming to you from our new studio on Veterans Memorial Boulevard, right next door to my guy Matt Bowers. If you need a car, check him out. He has locations all over the region. Any type of car you want, he'll get you taken care of with the best customer service, the best prices, the best car buying experience you can have. I vouch for him. That's my guy. All right, let's hit these ads. The New Orleans Football Show is proudly presented by PJ's Coffee. PJ's Coffee has some of the best drinks that you can find. They have locations all over the city. They have pastries and everything else you need to get your day started. So go check them out. Are you looking for the perfect engagement ring? Look no further than Friend & Company Fine Jewelers' new engagement salon. This new area houses a wide selection of engagement rings to choose from in all cuts, sizes, and colors. Their experienced staff offer five-star customer care to help you find the perfect ring to express your love. Visit their new engagement salon today. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the perfect ring for the perfect moment and also for the perfect person. 7713 Maple Street between Adams and Burdett Street. 504-866-5433. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers. Check them out at friendandcompany.com. Hard Hide Punch Tool Strawberry Whiskey is an 86-proof blend of aged wheat bourbon, American light whiskey, and fresh Punch Tool strawberries. Blended in New Orleans, it is not for the thin-skinned. Look for it in your favorite stores, bars, and restaurants. New Orleans Stop Football is proud to be sponsored by Firehouse Subs. Make sure you check out their location on Veterans Boulevard. All right, let's get into the show. All right, let's get into our lead topic presented by Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the official jewelers of the New Orleans Saints. If you are getting engaged, make sure you go check out their new engagement salon. They have rings in all kinds of different prices. You can get the big rock, the beautiful little rock, whatever you need. My guy Ken will take care of you, so make sure you go there and check them out. And while you're there, check out their Fleur de Lis earring and necklace. They are specially priced for our NOF audience. All right. Clint Kubiak officially, finally, it feels like the longest process ever to hire someone, but they had to get through the Super Bowl and all that stuff. But officially today he went in, he signed his contract, and now the OC search is officially over. They got their guy. So if we go through these, starting with quarterback, and there's really only one quarterback to talk about right now for the most part, but let's talk about who benefits the most from this. Let's go through every position, and then at the end, I guess we each pick a guy.
Number one.
Yeah, let's see where we're at.
Right.
Yeah. So starting out with the quarterbacks, how do you feel like he's going to lift, elevate Derek Carr?
Well, look, you've done a lot of good stuff on the site. Everybody's got to check it out, like very specifically about how it could affect Derek Carr. And man, time to throw. I tried to look at Carr stats. He's all over the map. I guess this is the result of him playing over a decade and playing for like five different offensive coordinators and so many different offensive systems. I think Derek Carr is good at throwing quick, getting the ball out of it quick. Last year, depending on which stats you looked at, he was either had the fourth highest passer rating or the sixth highest passer rating in the league, or shortest time to throw. But the thing that, and I'll let you talk about that more, the thing that stands out to me, play action. We know play action is Derek Carr's friend. We finally saw Derek Carr thrive and this offensive line be able to protect him when they added play action. The number one passer rating in the league last year in play action was Brock Purdy with the San Francisco 49ers. Carr was sixth among full-time passers, a passer rating of 117.6 on play action passes. Kirk Cousins had great play action stats. Clint Kubiak likes play action. His dad liked play action. The Shanahans like play action. How could play action not be Derek Carr's friend? I think the negative is it might take him time to adjust to yet another new system. Play action is my biggest positive there.
Well, it's actually interesting. Like, they went away from play action this year, the 49ers did, and they were spearheaded it. And kind of what they did is, if you look at it, they kind of simulate play action through the use of motion, and they get guys in the same positions and get the same looks. Like, they're kind of revolutionizing it a little bit. So my biggest question for Kubiak, and if we ever talk to him, like, I want to know his thoughts on it, because he was the play action guy. Like, his dad was the play action guy. Like you said, Shanahan was the play action guy, and then he wasn't. So I want to know where he stands on it. Like, is he kind of moving away from it a little bit? But it is. The Ringer had like a great breakdown on it too. Like, they just kind of do different things now to where you're getting the same thing, but your quarterback doesn't actually have to turn his back. So it's play action-ish in the result, in the picture it paints, in the length of time it sets it up, what you're doing to the defense. But like, you can be a little bit more manufactured with it by using some of this. It's just, it's kind of like mind-blowing the way they're kind of, and it's hard to be like the Kyle Shanahan's a genius guy right now, because like the Super Bowl and everybody like is overreacting to that or whatever, but he is. Like, the stuff he does is so, so brilliant. Going to the three-step drop, like, we're going to get into this a little bit more, but the quick game, no one's going to believe me when I say this, but it is factually, empirically true. Derek Carr has a better completion percentage on three-step drop than Drew Brees for his career. Drew's whole career, Derek Carr is better at it. Like, just completion percentage-wise. So that's something that he does.
And Drew Brees has the greatest completion percentage in NFL history, period.
Yeah, he does. And look, like, the top guy on that list is Mac Jones right now for his career. But then, like, you go through it, and it's star-studded on that list. And you got Aaron Rodgers, and everybody that you would expect to be there is on that list. And then there's Derek Carr, 2 points ahead of Drew Brees. Like, it's just, it's the most fascinating thing in the world to me. But, like, I think it can suit him really well because, and I don't want to give this away because we're going to get into it more later, but, like, you get predetermined reads and stuff like that. And I think if you just cut down some of that, and the whole protection issue is kind of taken off the plate because you're just getting the ball out. Like, you aren't even making adjustments at that point. So I think there's just a lot of stuff that suits Derek Carr really well in that aspect. And I think that they can unlock some of that stuff.
The funniest part of your Mac Jones stat, that like, Mac Jones, who's become like a pariah, had such good stats. He also made quick game. He like is the most famous person who like made quick game a bad word. Remember when he was like caught with a hot mic, like, no more effing quick game. I don't want to do quick game all the time. Well, you know, I think we understand now why your coach is wanting you to run quick game.
Yeah. He's really good at it. I mean, so I think that it should benefit Derek Carr. You know, if he settles into the system, I mean, that's the whole thing. Like, if he settles into it quickly, there's
that's
a lot of stuff
me.
Here.
That is a big, we can't gloss over that enough. That, like I said, I mentioned this on our previous show, Matt Ryan admitted that it took him a while to adjust to Kyle Shanahan's system before he made him an MVP. We have seen Derek Carr take a while to adjust to a lot of different offensive systems. So it's not as easy as saying, boom, he gets done. But the good thing is, Carr has done this kind of stuff before. They're not going to ask Carr to do something he hasn't done before, and the stats say he's done some of his best work when he's doing those things.
Yeah, and this system has its roots in the West Coast offense too, which is something that he's been good in throughout his career. So I think it's definitely beneficial for him, you know, getting him into a better offense. People that are, you know, using data and kind of being modern in their thinking and all that stuff. I mean, we absolutely saw it later in the season when they kind of started getting into it, how it helped them, and it's going to be there from day one, and there's going to be a plan behind it. All right, moving on to the next position group, the running backs, Alvin Kamara, Jamal Williams, Kendre Miller.
You just said Kendre Miller third. I want to say him first. He might be my answer to this question. Like, I'm thinking Arian Foster in this offense. I'm thinking Alfred Moore. Yeah, I mean, we're talking like undrafted rookie running backs. The one cut and go system. I feel like he could thrive. If the offensive linemen get the blocking down, they have tried, like you said, they've tried outside zone, they've tried wide zone. They haven't mastered it in years past, but now they're going back to the people who originated it. The new offensive line coach, John Benton, was the one originating with Gary Kubiak all those years, right underneath Shanahan. And I just think Kendre Miller is a guy who could thrive running in that system. So he's a guy who I'm more, even more intrigued by. But it could theoretically help all three of them. And obviously there's a big discussion to be had about how much this offense could help Alvin Kamara, and that's in the passing game too. If you're trying to get the ball out quick and get a lot of yards after the catch, I could benefit Kamara a lot too.
It's interesting here because, man, like I think Kendre has a chance to be really, really good and really special. And it's hard to measure how much this system helps him because he didn't do anything last year. So, but like I think across the board, it's going to be beneficial to everybody. Like I think Alvin, if they block better, if they build the run game better, I think it does a lot to help Alvin. He gets more space to run in. There's just a lot of stuff that I think is going to help him. And I thought he suffered the most from like their lack of creativity, their inability to block, not having the right people, I think, on the offensive line. Because he was the primary ball carrier the whole entire season. So their issues became his issues, and it's reflected in his yards per carry and really nobody else's. But look, I mean, like, if you want to go from just sheer stock rising, like, Jamal Williams can't be any lower than he was last season, so there's only room to go up for him. Kendre just kind of feels like the future of this group. And, like, I was super high on him last year. The injuries kind of made that, you know, derailed. But if I got to pick one out of this group, I think I just got to go Alvin. I think the creativity and just the space to run in and all that stuff, I think is going to help him a whole lot. But I think all those guys get helped. And you know who I think gets helped the most from the running backs? Derek Carr. Like, if they're running the ball well, it, like, it helps Derek and more than anybody.
This team ranked 31st in the NFL in yards per carry last year. They could bring back the same coaches and they're all going to do better. The idea that they almost base this decision around who has a great running offense and you know, bringing in a blocking scheme that's proven to work for runners, it will benefit all three of them, no doubt about it.
All right, moving on to the next group, wide receivers, putting up the top three, Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed, A.T. Perry. Don't have Mike Thomas on here right now because he's not really under contract, so we're leaving him off on there. Out of those three, who do you think gets the biggest bump from just kind of being in a more creative offense?
Well, I don't want to spoil my final answer here, but Olave is a guy that I keep thinking, we mentioned this with Nick Anderson. He was sitting in this chair right before we find out for sure that Clint Kubiak was going to get the job. And we were talking about, we had a conversation at the Senior Bowl about how one of the mantras of Clint Kubiak is, if something's working, he's going to keep hammering it. We saw him do that with Justin Jefferson when he was with the Vikings. We've seen Gary Kubiak do that when he was with the Texans. Andre Johnson's stats every year, 110 catches, 1,600 yards without fail. Arian Foster, 2,000 yards from scrimmage, 1,600 yard. Like, and then you sent me that quote from Andrew Janoco, the new quarterbacks coach, who said something like, you know, one of my mantras is, you know, if they're not stopping it, keep hammering them away until they prove they can stop it. I just feel like Olave is the guy on this team that we know is the special talent. And I just think track record, plus the things we hear these people say, is they're going to realize that's our best thing to attack you with. And every once in a while, I thought they got too cute and they got away from him too much. I like the idea that they're going to have a coaching staff that feels like, if this is a guy we can beat you with, we're going to beat you with him. And just the track record of receivers in this offense, I really think he's the guy who can maybe take that next step into the top tier of receivers.
I'm just going to go with a different direction just because I'm not repeating you. So I'm just going to go with my number two here, and kind of Olave's my top guy here. But I think Shaheed has a lot of opportunity to be better in this offense. And I won't say that it's because they didn't have a vision for him, because I think they did and they wanted to use all that stuff with him. And it just never really meshed very well early in the season. And they just went away from it and kind of simplified his role going forward. But if they can get him up to speed, get him comfortable with all the stuff they're doing, you know, I think with all these motions, all the sweep act, the jet motion and all that stuff, like, I think he's the guy. And I think you watch Miami and you see some of the stuff they're doing with Tyreek, and I think you try to take that and put a little bit of it on Shaheed's plate. And I'm not saying he's Tyreek Hill, but I think some of the creative stuff they do, like, there's a very similar profile here. And if you can get him the ball in space on some of this quick game stuff, I think his ability to make people miss shows up a little bit. And if they're hammering the quick game the way that the Shanahan teams did, the way that Kubiak's teams did in Minnesota, like, if you're throwing the ball to the guy when he's open, it's late. Like, their whole idea was, like, 6 inches of space is you're open, and if you're seeing the guy open, you're late. So throw it before he's even open. If you're doing that with Shaheed and you're letting him go with his speed and then his maneuverability, man, like, I think there's just a lot of stuff they can do with him after the catch. And I think it's going to benefit him a lot.
They've been missing that. And it's such an obvious – untapped potential with him.
Quarterback's got to be able to deliver those passes, though.
All right. Real quick before we go to another position, if Michael Thomas doesn't come back, which it feels like he's not going to, although this is an offense he'd probably like to be featured in. I don't know if that could change anything, but is, you know, we're talking about what this offense has, what it likes. We're going to get into this with the tight ends and the fullbacks, too, I know. But is there a style of receiver missing right now for this offense, you think, that's not in this graphic with Olave, Shaheed, and Perry?
Yeah, I mean, I've been pounding the table for the big body guys, someone that can block a little bit, that's good after the catch, can make a contested catch, that, you know, can be open in the red zone when he's covered. Like, I don't know that we see him right there. Maybe it is AT, but I would backstop that with another guy for sure. How about you?
Yeah, same thing. I mean, when we think of Miami and what they did when Mike McDaniel showed up there with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, you made the good point in your article the other day. Like, they actually shipped Mike Gesicki out of there. They didn't need they didn't have use for him, and they don't necessarily have that big-bodied guy. But, you know, San Francisco has George Kittle, and they have the physical Debo Samuel. I mean, it's different. You know, Andre Johnson was a big dude. Minnesota, when Kubiak had him, had Thielen, who's the ultimate possession receiver, who maybe Olave's got some of that, but it's different. You don't automatically know it based on the history, but we just know from looking at this team, they need one more red zone target, one more third and short target.
No doubt about it. All right, moving on to the next one. Tight end, fullback, Juwan Johnson, Taysom Hill, Foster Moreau, Adam Prentice.
You know, my first thought when we found out they were going to hire Kubiak was, oh, Adam Prentice is going to be so excited. This is a guy who, you know, this is an offense that loves the fullback. And then I read your article where you were like, this is a guy who loves the fullback, so maybe he's going to want to upgrade from Adam Prentice because they actually asked the fullback to do so much. Is Adam Prentice enough? Yeah. He's going to get a crack at it. He's going to get a crack at proving it. But I also wonder if Taysom Hill could do the things that a lot of, I will admit that this isn't completely an original idea. A lot of people have been sending this in for the Martins question and stuff. We didn't pick it today in part because we're going to talk about it here. Could he do a lot of the stuff Kyle Juszczyk does? Could he do some of the stuff Debo Samuel does? I mean, I'm really curious about that. I think Foster Moreau could benefit more, basically because he was like Jamal Williams last year. He wasn't used by this offense. These are coaches that prove they know how to use tight ends and fullbacks creatively. Juwan Johnson is the one guy who I don't know if he can benefit more from this offense. We obviously think he can have a better season, but gosh, I'm so fascinated to see what they do with Taysom Hill. I'm fascinated to see who on this team is their Debo and who on this team is their Juszczyk.
I don't know that they got the Juszczyk. I mean, it could be Prentice, but I mean, he's only caught, I think, 8 passes his whole entire career. Last season, he had issues catching the ball. The only thing I've ever really seen him do is go into the flat, and like Juszczyk is used in such a creative way. And I think the ability to use him in those creative ways, like, is one of those things that kind of makes this offense indefensible a little bit, or you know, you can't defend it. I'm scratching him off the list. I'm taking him off. It's not Prentice to me.
With the Taysom question. Does Taysom turn into that sometimes he's running, sometimes he's blocking, sometimes he's pass catching role, like almost like a fullback? I mean, he's done that before.
I don't see why not. I mean, that's where I would go with it. Like, let's just keep going on. Like, I don't think it's Juwan. I think Juwan gets better simply by being healthy and available, but I don't know that he gets enhanced throughout this offense more so than just health would. So I'm Xing him off the list. Then to me, it's Foster and Taysom. And I think that blocking aspect in the dual threatness could maybe elevate Foster a little bit, like more than he has been previously in his career. But yeah, I'm Xing him out. And I almost feel bad saying this, but like, I just think that these people are going to have a better vision for Taysom than the people that created him. Like, I do. Like, I think they just got so boxed into this like thing. And it was just always like, why aren't they being more creative? There's so much more here. You can do all these different things with him. Then they start trying to make him a tight end. And it's like, oh, okay. They're going to elevate it this way. And then it just never got leaned into.
I just completely agree with you. Yeah. Like, even though everybody made this joke, Sean Payton loves Taysom Hill, he's going to bring him to Denver with him, I don't think he ever figured out the right way for using him. And just what we see, we just mentioned Kyle Juszczyk, but Debo Samuel, I'm not saying he's either one of those guys, but it just proves that they find more creative ways to use guys who have different skill sets.
Yeah,
and
I couldn't
Taysom
agree more.
Hill's starving for that.
Couldn't agree more. They need somebody with just, I don't know, I'm not going to say better vision, but new vision.
Yeah.
New vision, I think, helps him so much more And I think just being looking at it from a distance, somebody might be able to see something that they never did.
And
so,
let me just ask you real quick, for all the people out there thinking, well, Juwan should be the next George Kittle. Why is that not X and O?
Yeah, I don't think he can. He's a former wide receiver. Yeah. Like, I don't think he can block that well yet. Like, maybe it gets developed. He gets there. He surprises us. But looking at it on paper,
different styles,
yeah, blocking is not his forte. So, I mean, I think he's a different type of player. And then what makes Kittle so great in this offense is the ability to do both. And then they get him in these advantageous looks because you have to treat him as if he's blocking based on certain types of personnel. And they just kind of tell a story through their personnel that sets him up to take, you know, advantage of weaknesses within the defense. So, yeah, I don't think that you defend Juwan that way yet. But if he can get a little bit more in that blocking aspect, absolutely. I mean, I think that there's things that they could do with them going forward. All right, O-line, Trevor Penning, Eric McCoy, Cesar Ruiz, or Nick Saldivari.
Yeah, Ruiz and McCoy, you made a really good point. They seem fit for this offense. They're athletic. They've already been basically running outside zone here in New Orleans. They're exposed to it. They're going to be taught by someone else and hopefully learn some new intricacies. When I read your article the other day, you brought up Nick Saldivari. I thought it was really fascinating because you said maybe he has the kind of athleticism they need. We've been sleeping on him a little bit, but maybe this opens the door for him. Maybe he's the style they want. And I can't help but wonder, and I want to get your thoughts, because you didn't write him up in that article a lot, but I mean, Trevor Penning, the reason he got drafted, he has this relative athletic score that's completely off the charts. Like, he's huge, but he has this, like, uncanny athleticism for his size. Is there any way that this is the system that unlocks anything? I don't have enough faith to think that him learning a new system is going to be good for him at this point, but he's another guy that can only benefit from something different, right?
It can't hurt somebody else getting a crack at him. Like, you're getting nothing now, so maybe something else does help, but I'm not willing to bet on. Like, if I'm picking out of these guys, I'm taking Saldivari. I think just the things we liked about him when they drafted him lend itself to this type of offense. Yeah. You look at their types of guards, like, he's the type of guard that should thrive in this system. We'll see. I mean, we haven't seen him really do anything yet, so it's kind of hard, again, to kind of bet on what you haven't seen. But we have seen Penning, and I don't like what we've seen to this point. He's got to change his story. Maybe he can. You know, I think Ruiz has to be better, too. I thought last year, just keeping it a buck, like, I thought last year was disappointing after the year he had 2 years ago. And I thought he stepped back a little bit. I hope McCoy's in his ear this offseason, kind of getting him back on track. Like, you know, I think McCoy is someone that can help him kind of get his just what he needs to do back on track a little bit. But I think for all these guys, a different voice can't hurt.
Yep.
And I think it's going to help all of them. It should possibly help Penning. But again, I can't bet on it. So I'm going to circle Saldivari here and kind of just take, you know, the perfect little, how we talk about draft picks. We've never seen the downside to him. So it's easy just to look at the upside.
Let me put you on the spot here. Do you think Penning is a left tackle or a left guard in this offense? What do you think these coaches are going to want to do with him in this system?
Well, I'll say this. Like, I've gotten a lot of questions about, like, flipping him. He's more of a right guard than a left tackle, or right tackle than a left tackle. I don't think it's a left or right issue. I think it's a Trevor issue. Like, I think it is. And I think it's him not reading between the lines of all the comments last year. It really sounded like he was having trouble picking stuff up, learning it and applying it. I don't think switching sides makes that easier.
No, I said, I said left tackle or left guard for my question, but I know you're getting asked a lot.
I'm speaking to Twitter. Yeah. Like, I think switching sides makes it harder.
Yeah.
I don't think putting him at guard changes anything either. I know we were talking to somebody and they said they haven't rolled it out yet.
Yeah. Jeff Ireland said that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's possible, but I don't know if things happening faster is easier. Like, and when you play onside, things happen a little bit faster. Playing in more space, if you aren't picking stuff up, that doesn't help either. So I don't really know what the answer is. I know when I look at kind of the way these teams set up their personnel, like, they don't have giant guards, so that's not something that I think lends itself great to him moving to there. So I think he's got to figure it out at tackle. But is it worth giving him a shot at guard and seeing if something sticks? Like, if nothing else is working, like, well, you have a first-round pick invested in this, so if you can get something out of it, great. But I don't think that's the answer. I think he just has to be able to take the stuff and take it to the field.
I want to note, too, I chose the names for this graphic. Ryan Ramczyk is not on there solely because we think the only thing Ryan Ramczyk needs is health. That's his huge storyline this year. If he gets that knee figured out, he's the best offensive lineman on the team still. He is athletic. when healthy. He'll do good in this system. And we don't have Andrus Peat on here because he's an unsigned free agent. But this could benefit him, too. He's a pretty athletic guy, too.
All right, let's move on to the next topic. The Saints have added Derek Foster to their coaching staff as the running backs coach. My guy from 27 Sports, Matt, man, I'm going to butcher your last name, bro. Like Zenitz, I think it is, reported that first. We have confirmed that. So that's a move that's to be expected to happen. I was told that Keith Williams, the former, well, current Baltimore Ravens assistant wide receivers coach, was in New Orleans interviewing today. I think he's kind of the favorite for that job, assuming everything goes well. So both those hires will probably happen sometime this week and become official later on this week. So that takes them to quarterbacks coach Anthony Janoco. Running backs Derek Foster, tight ends Clancy Barone, wide receivers possibly Keith Williams, O-line John Benton. Just a little bit of background on these guys. Foster spent the last 3 years with the Chargers after a decade in the college ranks, including stops at Louisiana's Northwestern State from 13 to 15. And a very, you know, I don't know if this helps his resume, but he went to Iowa. He coached at Iowa. So
if you're not trying to get a piece of the Iowa offense right now, you're just not trying at all.
Yeah.
It's like the Shanahan offense and the Iowa offense.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, man. It's worst offense to watch in the whole league. But no, I mean,
we're not holding that against Derek Foster. They know how to coach offensive line and they can run the ball.
Yeah, right? Jokes aside, Iowa has actually produced a handful of really good coaches. I'm just taking shots because Mike went there. But yeah, he coached Austin Eckler with the Chargers. So, I mean, that's a nice thing, a nice fit as you project him to Alvin. And then Williams was the assistant wide receivers coach with the Ravens the last few years. He has two decades of experience coaching wide receivers, including a stop at Tulane, I believe from 12 to 14.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, look, these are very experienced people. What do we think?
Well,
what do we
a think couple about things. A couple more things on Keith Williams. Also, coached at Fresno State from arrived the same time as Derek Carr as a freshman there, 2009 to 2011. He was there, so they'll have some familiarity. And he was a private coach throughout his coaching career for guys like Tyreek Hill and Devontae. He was like Tyreek Hill's guy. And then when he got the job with the Ravens, he was no longer allowed to private coach guys like that anymore. But what stands out to me about both these guys is we were just talking the other day about how Clint Kubiak's bringing in his guys he's worked with, guys who know his system, guys who's worked with his dad. This is the opposite. So these are two, not both young guys. Keith Williams has actually been coaching for nearly 20 years. Derek Foster for about 10 years or whatever, college and pros. But guys that he's probably gotten good recommendations from people he knows, but that he actually hasn't worked with or that hasn't necessarily worked in this direct tree. So if you like the idea that they're also trying to bring in some young talent, then you get a little bit of something from each bucket, so to speak. And that's how you have to build a staff.
Yeah, no idea about the Tyreek thing is news to me as you saying it right there. I mean, that's the headline right there. Yeah. I mean, this is a guy that trained Tyreek Hill, the best wide receiver, possibly, you know, top five in league history, I think. Like, I don't know. He's on my list somewhere in there. Randy Moss, him, Jerry Rice. I don't know who else, but yeah, I mean, Brandon's looking at me crazy back there. Dude, he gets 1,700 yards every year. He's one of the best receivers in league history. Yeah, I think so.
Nick's not the first person I've heard say that. I think he's going to get there. He's going to get there.
Yeah, I mean, the production keeps going. I think he's absolutely on pace. I mean, he's the biggest game breaker in the league right now. All right, going on to our next topic, just wrapping up the Kubiak talk. In the A block, at least. I think we're going to have a little bit more in the second half here. But
all Kubiak all the time here. In a way.
But yeah, I thought Albert Breer had a really interesting conversation with Clint Kubiak this week. He had it in his story coming out of the Super Bowl. Albert Breer talked to him. And let me just read through the quote. Just being here a year, my experience is Kyle really lets you into his brain in his game plan meetings, Kubiak said. He's thinking out loud in what he's looking for and what he wants to attack, the players he wants to attack certain coverages with. He's such a bright coach. Just to be around him, you soak in things that are important to him and things he uses to make decisions. I would say he's very forthcoming with his assistants, and he is also very challenging with us. He demands a lot out of us and gets the most out of us. He also said that Kubiak puts, or I'm sorry, Shannon puts a lot of pressure on people to improve, and he made Kubiak improve as a coach. And, you know, I thought this next part of it was, you know, Interesting. There's pressure, but what I found is it's good pressure. You better have a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C, and you better know why you're bringing up what you're bringing up. It's all for the right reasons. It's all for the quarterback to get the most successful play you can give him with the most answers. It's been a really eye-opening experience, a really positive experience. I'm just lucky to be a part of it. And I think one of the things a lot of fans were talking about and they were wondering is how much of the Shanahan influence was going to be part of what he does, or if he was just going to kind of roll back to what he did in Minnesota, which had the roots of the Shanahan stuff, but it didn't have the last of the seasoning, like some of the creative motion, some of the other stuff, some of the creativity, how they build plays. This kind of makes it sound like he's kind of absorbed all that and he's going to bring it with him. Like, it sounds like the influence is pretty great on how he
really
about
early
football.
On, I think I said it when the very first time I think Clint Kubiak was added to the list of people they were interviewing, and I think we might have had the chart of the seven guys on there or whatever. And I said he was my favorite in part because of his experience. He's been a play caller or whatever. And then I love that he went and got that, like I said, internship with Kyle Shanahan. And what it reminded me of is, not to compare him to Sean Payton, but what Sean Payton very shrewdly did in his career after he had been to a Super Bowl, been a play caller for the Giants, and then found himself out of a job after Jim Fossil and him kind of had the falling out. And he's like, I'm going to go work for Bill Parcells, like, and learn to be a head coach. He turned down the opportunity to be the Raiders head coach. He's like, I need this sort of internship under Parcells. And then that became his greatest mentor. Like, Sean Payton only worked for Parcells for 3 years after he had coached for 20 years before that. And almost everything you ever hear from Payton is Parcells. Because he went in there, like, with a notebook. Like, I am going to learn from this guy. And I was very curious. Is that what Clint Kubiak intentionally did last year? Was, I want to go work for the best. And when you read these comments, it really feels like he did that with intention and purpose to make him an even better OC when he got the next crack at it.
Yeah, I mean, just outside of everything else, I like that he went to a situation that, you know, in a lot of the assistants, like, people were, I saw like three different stories last week about just how hard it is to work for Shanahan. But I want somebody that went through that. I want somebody that can survive in a difficult grinding situation, that the attention to detail is going to be crazy, that you do have to have plan A, B, and C, and you do need to know why you're bringing this stuff up. Because then, when a quarterback asks you for information, or somebody wants to know why you're doing what you're doing, you can explain it and you have all the reasons and you've thought about everything. If you can go through a situation like that and you thrive in it, you're going to be stronger when you come out of it, and you're going to be stronger when you stand on your own. So I like that. I like that he went somewhere after being an OC once and then de facto OC in Denver, kind of a second time, the play caller at least. And then you go here and you feel like you came out of it better, stronger. You probably learned all the things you didn't know. Someone called you on your BS every time you were doing something the wrong way. I think that makes you probably a better coach. So if you're catching Kubiak now, this is where I'd want to be catching him. Not before. I think the after here, if he actually learned things, I think he's going to make him a better coach.
Absolutely. No doubt about it.
All right. That's all we got for this first block. Let's watch my guy Jeff's work here in the commercials.
Are you tired of renting and ready to own your dream home? Contact Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, your trusted source for home loans. Our competitive rates and flexible terms can help make your home ownership dreams a reality. If you're a first-time home buyer or looking to refinance, our experienced lenders are here to help. Our online application process allows you to apply on your schedule. It's quick, easy, and convenient. Visit us online at jeffersonfinancial.org to learn more. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
Martin Wine and Spirits is home to a selection of hand-picked barrel select bourbon, whiskeys, and much, much more. They are family-owned and operated since 1946 and specialize in wine, spirits, gourmet food, gift baskets, catering, and tasting events. They have many locations, so they're never too far away. You can check them out in Metairie, New Orleans, Mandeville, and Baton Rouge, or if it's more convenient, you can always shop online. Whether you're a wine novice or a seasoned collector, you'll enjoy the Martin Wine and Spirit experience.
All right, welcome back to our new studio here on Veterans Memorial Boulevard. I don't say that as much as Nick, but it's time for our money segment presented by Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, and I'm introducing it because the Telestrator is back. We got Nick, who, I mean, everybody else had carnival going on the last 2 weeks around New Orleans. It was Nick's own personal carnival. He's been diving into film. He's been diving into coaching seminar tapes. He's been, you know, just, I mean, this is Nick in a candy store going over everything he could get from Clint Kubiak, from Andrew Janoco, from John Benton. And what are some of your favorite concepts that you found, or one of your favorite concepts that you found in this offense that they're bringing to New Orleans?
I don't necessarily know if this is a favorite concept, but it's something that they do really well that I think is going to help Derek Carr a lot. And we were talking about just some of the three-step drop stuff. So I picked out a three-step drop staple because there's just a good example of how they use it, how they run it, how they get the quarterback in advantageous situations, and then how they build off of it to kind of tell a story. So we're going to kind of go through both of it. A really, really easy concept here, and it's double stick. And it's just kind of a staple of the three-step drop. And I tried to find I don't know how to get this thing off the bottom, but that's all right. There we go. All right. So it's just a very – keeps coming back on me. So we're just going to have to deal with that. This route out here is just – it's a dead route. It's just kind of a clear out route. You got the sticks on the inside, and then over here you usually got an option. There's a hitch here. You can keep going. And it's just something that they build off of really, really well. I tried to find an example of the Saints completing a pass off this last year to kind of show how they did it, and I was unable to find one. So we will not be showing that in this. But – here we go right here. Just really, really simple. Got the sticks. Got that going out. And then we're going to have kind of like a go fade over here. And you just got the setup here. And look, a lot of times they're going to the front side over here. That's where the concept's going to go. You can see right here. And this is where the quarterback's going to have a predetermined read. Normally it's going to probably be progressive where you're going 1, 2, 3. But you see right here, you just kind of have the honeypot just right up here, up the side of the field. Purdy's looking at it right away. You got single. You can tell this guy is going to be locked in down there. So you're just going to take the shot like right away. You're going to get the ball. Your back foot's going to hit. On something like this, you're just going to take – you're going to see the quarterback just kind of take one deep step because he's in shotgun. So the first two steps are already taken care of there. So it's really just kind of a one-step drop. But on a play like this, like if you're going to the front side, you're going to get it out right as that back foot hits. If you're going deeper over here, you're going to let your shoulder sink a little bit just to buy yourself just a tad bit more time so you can put the ball, you know, somewhere out here and let this develop a little bit. So that's the setup right there. As we're talking about with Purdy, you got the huge sink. You just got the big step back. And typically on these, that's how it's going to go. Like if you're doing a three-step drop from under center, it's going to be 1, 2, 3. Just like that. Like the first one's going to be slow and you're going to go like that. So that's the deep step that you would normally get under center. So you're skipping the other two because they're already there. So it's just bang. And then your back, your foot hits. And if you're going to the front side, your shoulder's going to be, you know, obviously the other direction. And you're hitting one of these guys coming immediately out of their break. But he wants us to develop a little bit. So he's going to let that shoulder sink just a little bit. And you can kind of see it developing here. You know, if he was going to the front side, he probably could have got, you know, something over here. You know, like I said, he's digging them out. It's kind of, what do they call it? A bus route? A bus ticket. That's what the Saints call it. The Saints call it a bus ticket.
I've been thinking of that play the entire time.
Yes, absolutely.
I hope he runs the whole route and looks just in case.
Absolutely. And again, I can't get my toolbox out of the way here, but whatever. We're going to work around it. But yeah, you kind of see it developing over here. He's not getting over the top of it, so you're waiting for it, and you're going to have to hit a back shoulder, which, you know, the ball's coming out here. Purdy, as I said before, these plays, you aren't throwing once you see them open. You're throwing as they're starting to come open, or you are throwing them open. If you're waiting for them to be open, you are late on these types of plays. So you see it right there. He's throwing it. He's not open yet. He's going to throw it out to the sideline. You're going to get a nice little back shoulder there. And there he is, making the catch. Brings him to the ground. Nice little completion. All right, let's go on to another one of these. And I picked this one out because it's just a nice example of just kind of getting your playmakers the ball. And it's the same setup here. Little bit of a – so we're going here, stick, and we got the, you know, the backside out of there. It's hitch or go, you know, something like that. Usually there's an option there based on the coverage. Again, we're in shotgun, so we aren't going to have the three-step drop. It's going to be one. And this is the guy you're watching here. Everybody should know him, Juwan Jennings. He had a good Super Bowl. Restricted free agent. Somebody, if he becomes available. The Super Bowl got him so hyped, and then you look up his numbers, and it's like, man, 200 yards. But he looks so good in that game.
Their very own Brandon Coleman.
Yeah, somebody that fits the system really, really well. Same thing here, though. Like, you got the single drop. Look at Purdy. He just locked in. He's about to get smoked. He stands in there and makes that throw.
Look, this is so important about the quick game because the pass protection did not hold up on this play.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
But it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. And the thing about it is, and I'm just going back, like, you don't typically make adjustments on a three-step drop. Like, you're just trying to beat the pass rush. And look, they're selling out. They're telling you, you know, someone's coming. How many of them are coming? Who knows? You got to try to read that before. Let me go back here. How many are they sending? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guys. So, I mean, you got a pretty strong blitz coming right there. But it doesn't matter. And look, the thing that makes it so much easier for your offensive lineman, too, because when you are in this type of offense, you don't have to play the line the same way. There's an equalizer here because you can be more aggressive coming out of it. So you're coming at them and you're attacking because you know you don't have to block very long. And there were issues the first year after Breeze. There was so much talk about the depths of the drops being off. And this is the stuff the offensive linemen were talking about, is that when that back foot was hitting, the ball wasn't always coming out when they had all those different quarterbacks playing, and it made it so hard to block because it was inconsistent. So if you have a consistent quarterback and you are doing the quick game, you're taking the three steps, and this is all the longer you got to block for. And the ball's out. Like, that's it. Like, that is it. So you can come out and you can attack. You can get into a stronger set straight up because the speed stuff isn't going to matter because you can't win with speed. So you're coming out and you're just trying to cut them off. And if you cut them off, you're trying to make the D lineman go to his counter immediately before he even sets you up with it. So in a different drops, 5-7, it's more passive. So you can come at this, you can attack, you block completely differently. You aren't worried about making adjustments. You're beating the blitz with the throw. So again, we got him here. That's the target. You see him kind of breaking a little bit. You know, it looks like it's just going to be a passive play, but you got the catch. And you got the stiff arm. And that's the thing. So many of their plays last year, as I was going through it on third down, like, so many of them were short of the sticks, and you just get guys running. You just get guys running. Like, short of the sticks, and you let your playmakers make plays. Like, it's just a concept that you don't see in New Orleans with the wide receivers because there were no yards after the catch. And he breaks the tackle.
Oh, I didn't think he was going to score in this.
Scores the touchdown, yeah.
That was a red zone play, by the way.
Yeah. So, all right, let's go to this. I'm just going to draw one up here real quick. Like, so some of the stuff they do, too, that you see in, you know, I always talk about telling a story with your play calling and all that. And it's one of the things they do so well in these offenses. And you got the same setup here. Get a little. So, like, that's typically what it looks like. But they do things like this where they kind of just build something off of it. So they'll get you biting on this, and they'll get you biting on it. And, you know, you start getting everybody kind of jumping down on these routes. So what they'll do is, well, clear this off. What they'll do is they'll give you this, but then they're building that off it. So you get them jumping on that, and as soon as you see someone bite, they're going to hit that, and they're going to hit you on a shot play off this. And, you know, another thing with these two is, like, these aren't all short passes. Like, I saw plays from Miami where they're running this same exact concept, and it's 40 yards up the sideline. It's 40 yards up the sideline to Justin Jefferson in Minnesota. It's 40 yards up the sideline to Ayuk. Like, you can get shot plays out of this, too, where it's just guy wins quickly off the line and you're bombing it and they can run under it. You got fast guys. Like, Shaheed can get 40 yards down the field, you know, in a very short amount of time and make a deep play. So they do a lot of this quick game stuff. You know, a lot of times it's just going to be completion, 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 completion. But, you know, every now and then your intent to come out here might be to get a shot off. It might be to get a chunk play. But a lot of times it's completion driven. And that's how you get Derek Carr at 74% on these plays, and you kind of keep it going. Last year, he was at 83%, I believe, top seven in the league in QB rating on quick game stuff. That is playing to his forte. It's making it easier for him. It's a predetermined read. You're a lot of times, sometimes it's progressive, but if you get the right look, you know where you're going before the ball is even snapped. If you can do stuff to take pressure off of him, pressure off of these guys up front, that's how you get better. That's how you make life easier. That's how, you know, you win games, by just doing things that make things easier for your players. So I like the idea of it. That's my dissertation on the double stick.
Yeah. I was going to bite my tongue if you hadn't said anything, too. But that's all I was thinking. Oh, this guy just is supposed to run.
I was thinking about it the whole time. Yeah, I was thinking about it the whole time. All right, let's go on to our Martin's question of the day. Martin's is home to a wide selection of handpicked barrel select bourbon, whiskeys, and more. Martin's, so much more than just wine. They got a great deli, too, man. Go check that out for sure. All right. Who do you see the Saints targeting in free agency? Loomis always tries to get I'm just reading this question exactly how it came off of Twitter. Loomis always tries to get serviceable guys to fill holes so he can draft best player available. Who do you think is realistic for them at positions of need in free agency? I assume a measured approach, but do you see them signing a big money pass rusher in free agency?
Well, I've mentioned it a million times. I heard you mention it on my behalf when I was gone last week, that I want them to spend the appropriate amount of money on a defensive end. I think it's a must in free agency. I don't think you can wait for another draft pick to help. They got to get somebody in here right away. I want to go above the Colin Saunders, Nathan Shepard line. But I don't think they're going to get in the Daniel Hunter territory, even though, frankly, I wouldn't kill them for it. If they go ahead and they spend top dollar on a defensive end like they did for Derek Carr last year, I can't blame them. It's what this team needs badly. But I have three names on this list of directions I think they could go. Speaking of the Hawkeyes, I am not trying to show a bias, but I actually reached out to somebody who gave me this recommendation. You know, who's the hidden defensive end? Who's the Zach Bond of, like, defensive ends? Like, a young up-and-coming guy that shouldn't cost a lot of money but can really help. And Epinesa was the first person he mentioned. 6.5 sacks for the Bills in each of the last 2 years, even though he didn't start. He came off the bench with 6.5 sacks each of the last 2 years. Second-round pick in 2020, 6'6", 260. You know, they like a defensive end. He's got the athleticism. He's got the size. And he just needs a little bit more opportunity. He should not cost a lot. That's the kind of guy I like. If they're willing to spend a little more, I like Jonathan Greenard of the Texans. We talked about him, and he was having a breakout year last year when the Saints went to play them. He finished with 12.5 sacks. He was a third-round pick in 2020, speaking of Zach Bond. He's had some injuries. He might cost more like $12 to $14 million. I don't know if they'll want to go there, but I wouldn't blame them if they did. And then you could go the Za'Darius Smith route. He's 31, three-time Pro Bowler. Minnesota, Cleveland, Green Bay, Baltimore. He had 5.5 sacks as a full-time starter for Cleveland last year, 10 sacks. He's 31 years old. But if you want to go for the guy who's going to help you right away, he's another possibility, 6'4", 275. That's where I'm shopping. I'm shopping for somebody like that.
A lot of these guys probably end up getting re-signed too, so we have no idea who's actually going to be available. But, like, let's just, you know, the guys at the top of the list, like, if they want to go crazy, like, the Josh Allen, the good Josh Allen, the better Josh Allen is due to be a free agent.
Sign me up.
17.5 sacks last year. That's going to take all the money. That'll take all the Kai homework, you know, everything. But, I mean, would you do it?
As I've said, I don't like the idea of making a move that feels all in for now. But if you're signing Josh Allen, he is the core of the next iteration of the Saints, too. So I really wouldn't have a problem with it. Defensive end is going to be important, even if they have different coaches and different quarterbacks 3 years from now. So that's not wasted money. A Josh Allen, if I'm a fan of any team in the league, I want Josh Allen.
I'm not interested. Like, we have the same thoughts here. Like, I'm not interested in being like, well, I wouldn't. You know, like, we wouldn't. Like, we wouldn't go all in on this team. We wouldn't have brought it back the way that we would have done different things. Would Mickey do it?
I would have a different record prediction for this team if they added a Josh Allen or a Daniel Hunter. I really would. That it's such a one missing piece that's a position where I wouldn't blame him.
Would Mickey do it? Do you think Mickey would
do it?
Yes,
of course Mickey would do it.
I mean, I think it's in the cards.
Entire history.
I think a big swing is in the cards. Like, I think it's needed enough, and they are dug in enough to do something desperate. Like, they would do this. I think they would. I don't know about Josh Allen, but, like, I think I got three guys in my top tier: Josh Allen, Brian Burns, and Hunter. Hunter kind of scares me a little bit because he's going to be 30, and I think you're paying for the past.
But I think he'll
be
the third most expensive of those three.
I agree. He scares me a little bit, but he had 16.5 sacks last year. Like, you're paying for some of the downside, though. Like, he's still at his peaks, which kind of makes him a little bit scary. But I think it's possible any of the three. I just don't know if they're going to win a bidding more. But I think they're going to make those. You have to. Like, they are so desperate at those spots. And if you get one of these guys, you still got a need, though. Like, that's the thing. Like, it doesn't even satiate. I think you need two.
Getting one thing, Gray Anderson and Cam Jordan being my 2 and 3.
I want somebody else in my rotation, man. Yeah. Like,
all right, fair enough.
I don't know, but then okay, then I got tier two. Bryce Huff with the Jets, he had 10 sacks. It was kind of like there's a lot of guys that peaked last year. Bryce Huff had 10 sacks.
Huff's a little more of that Zach Bond-sized guy, but they said they're open to that.
Yeah, Uche's one that's kind of in that kind of tweener thing. He had 3 sacks, 11.5 the year before. Scares me a little bit that you see that number dip. He fell out of favor, though. But I think he's like a third down guy that's kind of cheap. Yep. Like, sure. Van Ginkle from the Dolphins, again, smaller guy, but he had 6 sacks. Like, again, third down role, someone that can chase people down. Greenard was someone on my list, 12.5 sacks. Man, these kind of guys scare me, though. Like, and I've never been more wrong on anyone in my entire time than Trey Hendrickson. But it was just like, he scared
the Saints. They didn't want to pay for 1 year production either.
I'm quoted. You can find the clips out. Like, I'll never have that type of season again. Well, that was super wrong. So, I don't know. Chase Young, someone too.
Oh, I don't think so.
2.5 sacks after he went to San Fran.
Oh, then he was solid in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That helped him. How much money did he make by showing out in the Super Bowl?
Wow. Yeah, I think it helps. But, I mean, look, I take any of these dudes, honestly. Like, they need
What's
somebody.
Funny is the guy in the question, the reader in the question, didn't ask about defensive ends, but we both had a list of just nothing but defensive ends.
Well, he said they signed big money on a pass rusher.
Oh, did he say he did? Okay.
Let's take another one from the chat here. Michael asks, is Kubiak the one having the most say in the offensive hirings? Yeah, he's getting his guys. Like, I don't know why it turned today. Like, everyone was like, oh no, they got a Ravens guy. Like, this is no good. And it's just like, well, as you said, he coached Tyreek, like 20 years of experience. Like, just because he was in an offense where they didn't air it out, like, that doesn't have anything to do with him. Like, he's just coaching these guys. So it's always hard to know if a position coach is good, too. Like, I don't – it's just always like, oh, okay, they got him. Like, and then you kind of look at who they've been around, and it's like, all right, like, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. It's so hard to know kind of how people develop. But, yeah, that's it. That'll do it for today's show. Appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll be back on Friday with a whole lot more, probably still breaking down Kubiak and how everything fits in this offense.